Welcome to this week's episode of Straggler Adventures, where we introduce you to really cool people who do really cool things. We're not your parents' middle-agers reminding us that you don't have to be first to be the greatest, and it's never too late to live your best life.
My name's David, and I'm here with Shauna. We're going to be interviewing people who do different and random things throughout the Metro Detroit and Ohio area, sometimes nationwide, sometimes worldwide. To be honest with you, I don't know who the guests are, so I have absolutely no clue. Part of the reason I wanted to do this is because I think it's cool that we know enough people who do enough random things and are out there living their best lives that I thought we should share it with everybody. Like just some of the inspirational stuff that goes on out there, not to give away guests or anything, but we have some really cool people coming up. I thought it'd be great to share their experiences and their inspirational stories behind what they do and how they get up every day and decide, hey, I'm going to go do this. And yes, it's going to hurt, but I'm going to do it anyways and be happy about it. I give you a little background on myself. I'm an IT guy. I played sports when I was younger. I watch it 90% of the time. I just thought it'd be cool to talk to people about it. Maybe get some other people, get some inspiration and share their stories. We've recorded a few of these and I can tell you that the stories and their inspiration is wonderful. It's been great to do.
A little bit about my backstory is I've been a single mom for a long time, and I had my kid who was wonderful when I was pretty young at 24, and I have just seen the older generation come to their 40s, and after their kids start to leave the nest, just see a lot of people kind of starting to figure out what their next phase of life is because they've devoted so much time and mental load to raising their family, and then what happens after that. About 10 years ago, my daughter and I were living a great life, but something was missing. I wanted to show her that you could do whatever you wanted to do. And so at a larger body size, I decided I was going to start doing triathlons. And I'm not a runner. I've never been into sports. I played softball one year, and my dad will tell you I was the absolute worst player on the team. To say that I was stuck in right field picking grass is an understatement. I'm not an athlete. I didn't have a lot of hobbies. I love theater. I've always loved theater, but I just needed something else. I got into triathlons and started to do running. And since then, I've tried a lot of different things, belly dancing, things that are outside of what my norm would be, but I've kind of fallen in love with trying different things. And now that she is in college, I have all of these things and hobbies to fall back on. Also looking forward to all the new hobbies that I'm going to start collecting and doing all these fun things in the future, because the world is our oyster and there's so many neat things to do. And when your kids leave the nest and you start feeling this midlife crisis, it doesn't have to be the end of your value, and your worthiness is not just wrapped up in your career. For me, I'm just really looking forward to sharing these exciting stories of so many people that we know, and hopefully meeting new people to share stories of people who just found really cool things to do that you may not have thought of, and maybe inspires you to try belly dancing, triathlon. And I'm not going to give away any of our really cool guests that are going to be on here, but it might inspire you to try something new and realize that you are so much more capable than you know. Even if you spent the last 20, 30 years raising kids, your body's not too old to start something really fun that you want to do. I saw something today, somebody was talking about they did a marathon, and they said there's something to be said about the back of the Packers because they are the ones having fun. Doesn't mean they didn't train hard. It doesn't mean that they didn't work hard, that they're not sore. They're having fun in the back and they've still worked hard. They still deserve to be there, even if they're not right in front. And I feel like that's such a good metaphor for this podcast. Just because you aren't following your college softball dreams at 22 and didn't continue playing, that doesn't mean you can't get towards the middle of your life and go, I want to try something else. Maybe I didn't get there as quickly as anybody else did, but there's still lots of time. So I'm just really looking forward to having all of our guests. Like Dave said, we've recorded a few. I mean, holy crap balls. the inspiration that came out of them. And I already knew their stories. I just hope that everybody who listens feels motivated, inspired to do something that maybe they've wanted to do and didn't feel that they could for whatever reason. Ladies and gentlemen who are listening, please know that if you have something you feel that you would like to share on a podcast, please reach out to me because I love surprising him with our guests and just letting him be surprised, pleasantly surprised by the people that we have on. So if you have a story or a hobby that you think would be great for this podcast, please do not hesitate to reach out to Shauna. So we're really excited to share our stories and our friends and our new friends and learn, you know, meet some new friends to do this. And we're hoping to get an episode out every 2 weeks. So please subscribe where you found us at so you can stay up to date.
That's wisdom there.
Thank you for joining us. Dave and I are here, and we are so excited to have Brian, who is going to share with us his amazing journey of grit and determination through the world of canoe marathoning. So when we're thinking about whose stories can we tell, and look, if we have three listeners, I don't care. This is just really fun and a way to showcase even to three listeners just really fun things that you can do. And I don't know if you know this, I have a flamingo tattoo on my back now.
I do know that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so flamingos, when they have babies, they turn white because they've given all their nutrients and the food to their babies. And they are pink because of what they eat. And then when their babies are old enough to survive on their own, they get their pink back.
Oh, so you got your pink back.
I got my pink back when my daughter turned 18. Hi, Brian. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here.
We're very excited to have you here. A little geeked out about it, actually. Tell us a little bit about your story and how you got into the marathoning of canoeing.
Well, I grew up in Grayling, Michigan. It's northern Michigan. It's on
Sabo River.
Yep. And this river also hosts Sabo River Canoe Marathon. It's a 120-mile canoe race that goes from Grayling in the center of the state, all the way out to Oscoda on the east coast on Lake Huron. It starts at 9 o'clock at night. It travels through the night nonstop to Oscoda from anywhere from like 14 to 18 hours for most paddlers. So growing up and like watching this event is kind of like the Kentucky Derby for our town. It's a one time a year exciting thing. And growing up, your heroes are those guys and gals who are paddling this race every year, because some of them were teachers, some of them were custodians in our schools, post office workers. They're everyday people, but they were heroes. And I remember growing up saying, "Oh, someday I'm going to do that. Someday I'm going to do that. And someday I'm going to do that." Really has become like a theme in my life, and a phrase that's happened over and over and over. It took a long time for someday to happen. I waited till I was in my 40s for someday to happen for the canoe marathon, and it took me to be thousands of miles away in Alaska to decide that, hey, I'm going to do this thing, and the time and the effort into doing it. Stop making some days. Make some day today.
What were the like complications in there? Because I can't imagine like canoeing, and what possesses you to get in the river and do that? I've been on the Asabo River in a canoe. What possessed you to decide that's the direction you wanted to go in racing? And
I've been doing big, crazy things since high school, or since shortly after high school. I remember going to college and paying $4,000 to find out professors are just reading textbooks to me when I can read them myself, and quitting college and running off and doing the Appalachian Trail with no backpacking or camping experience in my life without anybody going with me. I only did 500 miles of it. But I think
you just said you only did 500 miles.
Well, it's like, I don't know how many miles. It's over 1,000 miles.
Yeah. It's funny to hear you say you only did 500.
When you have a huge trail and you only do a portion of it, I guess it's easy for me to say 1,000. But I think that is kind of what led me to doing some bigger things. Things that end up being somewhat solitary, but yet still communal. I know definitely going out there gave me confidence in myself that I never had before, to go out there on your own and try to tackle something that you have no experience in, which I should never have done. It was stupid. Not stupid, but life-changing.
All those moments are. Let's put it that way.
But
ultimately, like, I had failures along the way. There were scary moments along the way, and I survived those scary moments. I survived those failures, came out of those failures stronger. And I'd say not necessarily just physically stronger, but more so confidence and mentally stronger. It allowed me to do things I probably would have never done before taking on a challenge like that. And took being angered at society and the way institutions are being run to initiate that. And I'm lucky I took that path instead of maybe other negative path. And in some ways, it was running away from the problem. I didn't tough it out in college. I ran away from college. It ended up being a good thing. And it kind of opened the doors to, hey, you can do some things that are uncomfortable. And it's okay. And you can work through those things. Led me to meeting Shauna. I hadn't done that. I never would have ended up in Jackson and taking a chance at working at teaching a bunch of kids, working with a bunch of people I've never met, living in a place I've never lived. That was uncomfortable, but it was doable. And that led to other wild and crazy adventures and big things. But like ultimately doing the marathon came back to, hey, stop saying someday. Let's take that foot forward and let's do it. Luckily, when I did that, I had a friend who grew up in Grayling with me. She was living up in Alaska and she had revealed the same thing that, hey, someday she wanted to do it. Kind of a mutual decision. So we had that mutual support back and forth to do it. That accountability for training. With most adventures, you can't do it completely on your own. You need a support crew. You need that accountability.
So you started training while you still lived in Alaska, right?
Yes. That was an adventure of its own. 2,000 some miles away. We have rivers in Alaska, obviously, but these rivers are not like the Isabel. Like most of Alaska, the wilderness out there is out to kill you. There's nothing safe about it. You don't do things out there on your own very safely. The rivers there, they're glacier fed, so they're ice cold. You tip. Your time to get out of the water, get dry and warm is very short. So we start off, we got dry suits, and we're like, we got this. We're going to do this. It took us half a year to get a canoe up there, a race canoe like the ones that we'd be racing down here. We ended up buying a canoe in Minnesota. A friend of mine from college worked for a company that built climbing walls, and they were building a climbing wall at the base up in Anchorage, and they were able to slip the boat into the trailer to get it up there. It was just like all these things had to happen for this to happen for us. So these rivers, we couldn't really paddle any rivers. We found one river that we could relatively safe. The only problem with this river was that it was pretty remote. It was on the road system. We could get to a starting spot on it, and then we could drive 2 hours to get to a finishing spot. And my partner, Mandy, she had been on a camping trip, and she's like, yeah, I think it's about a four-hour paddle. Well, four-hour paddle ended up being 8 hours. It was insane. 8 hours. It's braided, so like having to choose which path on this river to go. Over the course of 8 hours, we're drinking a lot of water, so we also have to stop and pee quite a bit. And we'd stop on these sandbars in the middle of the river. And I remember the first one we stopped at, sent her off to go to the bathroom first, and I'm going to stay here at the boat. Stand there in the boat, like I looked down the sand, and there's this print. This is a grizzly bear print that is bigger than my foot. I wear like a size 9.5. So it's a pretty big print. And it's the first grizzly print I've seen. And oh God, I'm just seeing that about you. Made a mess of my pants. And I didn't say anything until she got back to the canoe. And I said, hey, did you see that? And I point down and we got to start being more careful about this. We got back in the boat and it wasn't 2, 3, 4 bends down the river. Big brown thing in the center of the river. Whoa, what is that? And we're both like in this river. And it's faster than the Isabel. And we're back paddling. And it's a mama moose. And she's got her calf like swimming up behind her. And we're doing everything we can to back paddle so we don't slam right into the side of her. And well, that's stuff that you don't see up here in northern Michigan.
Right.
this one river that we could train on ended up being, I think we were on it 3 times. First time was 8 hours. Second, third, fourth times were like closer to 6 to 5 hours. Got more proficient in the boat, but it just wasn't safe. It wasn't efficient to do that. So the majority of our training came on this little lake, but it also happened to be a lake that had lots of float planes. We had some company out there, but the lake itself, I think we're going maybe a quarter mile to do a loop around it. We'd go out there and we'd do loop after loop after loop all weekend long. And I swear, the people who had houses surrounding this boat, I mean, they're swank houses. They had to be looking at us like we're flipping crazy for 2 hours just doing loops around this lake. But yeah, I mean, 95% of our training for our first canoe marathon was just quarter mile loops around that lake, bored out of our gourd, but it worked. It was good training. A lake you don't have current, so a little bit extra muscular work, and it trained us to be bored and to handle it. It's a marathon for us that year. It was over 18 hours. I think it was 18 hours, 27 minutes or something. Okay. Around there.
Yeah, that's a long time to be out there, like rowing and running and moving. Paddling. Yeah. Paddling. Yeah.
I don't call rolling around canoes.
Because you, with the Aosable marathon, you canoe marathon, you also have to pick up your canoe at some point and carry it.
Yeah, we have 6 hydroelectric dams along the way, and we have to portage around those dams. We actually start the race running. So a Le Mans style start. Before the marathon starts, the prior week, we do sprints that will help determine our position on the road. The faster you are in those paddling sprints, the closer you are to the starting line and the shorter distance you have to run with your canoe. But yeah, you have 100 boats lined up on the street, spaced out about 10 feet between the bow of my canoe and the stern of the next canoe in front of me. At 9 o'clock, the sheriff fires the gun and we all grab those boats, take off running down the street about a quarter mile for the last team, hop in the river and hit the water paddling. Those breaks around the dams are definitely welcome after sitting. Oh, the first one is the longest way. It's like 6 hours before you get to that first dam. By then, your butt's kind of it's kind of sore.
You need the movement. You need to stand up. Get up for.
Oh, and when you try to stand up, oh my gosh, you look like Bambi on ice. Oh my gosh, your legs are just like jello. They're wobbling, and you like see people get out, and that first step, like they're practically falling on their face. You don't have that proprioception in your leg anymore.
Oh
yeah, that would be crazy. That would be crazy to stand up.
So, is part of your training to do long canoe rides and then get up and run? Do you do that as part of your training?
Initially, it wasn't. Initially, all the focus for me was really just the paddling. Just hammer out the paddling over and over and over and see how many hours I could get in. There's no rhyme or reason to it other than just getting the boat and paddle. But now as I progressed a little bit more in the sport and now definitely become a lot more serious these last 2 years, definitely started focusing on being more efficient with the training and thinking about what training will best benefit me in the big race and the shorter races that we have throughout the year. Yeah, like last winter, I was caretaking a house and I'd paddle upstream from that house to a road, and I'd get out that road, that landing, pull my canoe up, leave it on the shore, go and run down the road, and then come back. I'd put in like a half mile run, hop back in the canoe, and then paddle back downstream to the place. Yeah, it's nice to get that cross training and get that practice, knowing how your legs are going to respond when you're getting out of the boat, but also knowing how to get in the boat really quick and
back to paddling. To
continue paddling with that elevated heart rate, because when you're running, my heart rate goes up a lot higher than it ever does when I'm paddling. I think it's because you're probably using those bigger muscles in your body a whole lot more.
So when does this take place? Wait,
the last full weekend of July.
Okay, the last full weekend of July. So it varies on the dates exactly because of how the calendar falls. Well, at least it's in the summer.
it hasn't always been.
That's crazy.
This race has been around, since the 50s, 60s. And that date, that floated for quite a while. And we have good daylight. The nights aren't super cold. The morning for the finish gets pretty hot for some of the slower teams.
But you start to come in mid-morning, right? Because you start at 9 o'clock, you said. So you start to come in like 11, 12 o'clock. So it's
Your winner is 11 o'clock.
So you're doing it again this year, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are the things other than paddling that you do to keep yourself in shape or to improve your performance?
Now I'm really into more of that cross train aspect, pulling those other training aspects in. I'm lucky enough to work in a school district where our superintendent is a huge CrossFit athlete, and he has part of our staff wellness program. He is offering CrossFit classes 3 times a week, and that's been great. I did that last year, started this year, and then about a month ago, instead of just 3 days a week, jumped it up and started joining him in the gym in the mornings, going into the gym at 5 o'clock and working out every morning, then every afternoon working out again in there. And so that's doing CrossFit every single day. With CrossFit, I'm also doing running on the treadmill. Just started hopping on the bike I hate the bike. I hate sitting in that seat. I need to get some padding or something. My bottom is not meant for that little man. I don't know how you do triathlon. I hate that.
Well, I will tell you the secret to that. The bike shop told me, because I was using my past bikes. I had, I was like, how much padding can I get back there? Right. Like I just kept thinking of padding as padding as padding. And what they told me is that's not going to help you the way you think it is. The right seat that has like aerodynamic and has like airflow, and when the bike is fitted to you correctly, it really does make a huge difference. You're never going to be like, wow, this is really comfortable.
No, I mean, I love my canoe seat. My canoe seat looks like, it looks like an old tractor seat. It's got the cups and I put one layer of like sleeping pad and foam on it. And I know initially when I started the sport, it hurt no matter what you did to the seat. And people would say, oh, you just got to add more layers. And it's like your bike shop guys said, like the extra padding doesn't help you.
Yeah.
People would say, oh yeah, you got to cut out the sit bones. So I'd have these two little holes. They look like giant eyeballs. In the seat. And those hard bones in your butt, they'll just sink down there and it won't hurt. Or, all these little like crazy things. And what I found out is just the more I paddle, the more flexibility I gain. It stopped hurting. I know I just need to put the time in on the bike. Man, that thing sucks. And then I also have a Concept 2 rower. I love that thing. I was rowing with that for a long time until I found a company that makes an adapter for it that you can connect a canoe paddle to. So now I can really get
you're actually using your paddle for like a canoe paddle.
Yeah. So I get home from work sometimes and it's dark and I can put a light on my canoe, and we paddled during the canoe marathon with the light on our canoe. In the winter, it's dark on your own. I mean, those are three recipes for disaster. I've had a near death experience already in my life. I don't need to go through that again. So it's just safer to come in here, sit in the paddle machine, and it's nice. Like, one of the benefits I've learned from it is that I can work on my paddle stroke in isolation without having to worry about what the current's doing to me, and purely just work on the basics. And
yeah, the repetitive motion, that like fundamental.
Exactly. Yep. Am I getting it in the right angle? Am I throwing my shoulders the right way? Am I getting the full hip rotation that matches my shoulders? Am I putting the power and the catch in the right spot? Am I stopping the paddle stroke at the right spot and pulling out? It's all those things that you have to think about while you're paddling. But as soon as you toss in current, and keeping your balance with the current. And last winter, a log that wasn't there and it suddenly is there that flipped me. Like, there's so many variables that you have to worry about. If you can take those out and you can just work on the technique on that paddle machine and still get the good cardio work, and I can turn that damper up and amp up the difficulty and build up the muscle at the same time. And then I've also tossed a TV up in front of it, and I can put on the canoe marathon videos and watch other people paddle while I'm paddling. This year, I'm determined to, I'm going to pull out the nerd in me. I'm going to pull up the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And I'm going to simulate doing the canoe marathon on the paddle machine this winter while playing those movies. I figured out there's enough footage in those movies for me to do the full marathon. I want to set up my feeds all next to me, so I can just grab those. I'm not gonna be able to pee on the paddle machine like I do in the canoe, so I'm gonna have to get run to the bathroom. But those get up and run to the bathrooms, and then I'll probably just hop on the treadmill and run for whatever it is to emulate the portages and just make it work.
That's so cool.
It's a fun thing.
Yeah, that is definitely cool. Like, I mean, that is something like, I mean, I've since meeting Shawn, I've seen her do, you know, triathlons and other various things. And then she mentioned at one point that you were doing this with a canoe. And I was like, that is nuts. I'm like, I didn't even know that existed in that. It's so cool that you do it, and it's fun, and you find enjoyment in it and peace out there doing it.
And you said the key word there is the peace. That's so I trained for my first marathon up in Alaska and came back and did it and realized again that this was home and this is where my heart was. I went back to Alaska that year and said, hey, I'm done. Came back here, got a job in a little town just south of here. And pretty much every day after work that I could, I would hop in my solo boat and go out paddling. It was my peace, no matter how stressful it was at school, no matter how much grief an administrator was giving me. Like, I hop in that canoe and, oh my gosh, it washed it away. There's something about that river, nature, especially this time of year when the snow's out, it is so quiet. It's peaceful. It's hard to go out there and maintain stress. It's hard to go out there and maintain anger or aggression. I don't think that's a natural state in nature, and the river makes you get rid of it.
Yeah, it gives you that calming nature. I get that. Like, there's things that everybody has that brings you from here to here, and you're just like, oh, hey.
Yeah.
I'm at home out here.
that really is a key to, I think, life, is finding what that is that brings you that peace, whatever the grounding is, whether it's getting up on stage, whether it's getting in your car and driving and singing at the top of your lungs, holding your baby, going for a walk with your dog. I don't care what it is.
Running, going for a run.
Find that. Get out and do it.
Yeah, that's so true. Okay, so let me ask you, what are you most proud of?
Relationships, people. I'm a sappy guy. Get choked up thinking about it. Like, just think about all the people in my life that have helped me get to where I am, who continue to support me. We're not on this planet alone, and we're lucky for that. Even people who aren't in my life anymore, they're still out there, and they've still had an impact. I never have done the Iditarod without all the people who supported me. I never would have done the marathon without all the people who supported me. Wouldn't have become a teacher. These relationships, like, you and I haven't seen each other for, I mean, it's been maybe 20 years. I don't know. I haven't even done the math on it. It's been a long time.
We met 22 years ago. I did the math there. Yeah.
And I saw you.
Diego's welcome home party. Yeah.
Yeah. Shortly after that. Like, it was right around when your sister had the fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, around 20 years, but 20 years removed, and it's like yesterday. And I, like I said earlier, I can still tell stories about my time with you to my girlfriend, how impactful it is, and tell little stories about your daughter and the journey that you both have gone through. And yeah, I mean, the relationships, that's what I'm proud of. Like, all these races I have done, they're one thing. Everybody has their version of these races, whether it's something like a race or whether it's something in life, a challenge. All the stuff that you've done with your plays and your directing, for me, that's just, wow, that's monumental for me. That's the Iditarod for me, because that's something I can't ever conceive doing. But, I mean, we all have our own thing.
Mm-hmm. It's, yeah.
People, I think a lot of people, even my parents, they want to hang their hat on the Iditarod or the canoe marathon. Oh, my son's amazing because of that. No, like, anybody can do it. You just need the right circumstance. You need the right people around you. Anybody can do any of these things.
Yeah, but you're still pretty spectacular.
I have spectacular people around me. That's it. It's,
you are.
I'm no different than anybody else. And that's why I try to preach that to my kids at school all the time. We have a phrase up on the board that I wrote up. I had to write it down. Because it's big. It's the phrase is, before you can win, you have to believe you are a winner. Winners think, look, act, and behave like winners. They focus on the daily process of doing what needs to be done to become a winner. And I phrase it to him all the time. I say, hey, you guys are winners right now. If you want to rephrase that, is, you guys are learners. You are scholars. Whatever it is, you are that right now. You have to continue doing what it takes to live up to what you are. My students are all amazing. They're all winners, and we're just going to continue working to be winners. We're all going to be working to be amazing. You just have to define that for yourself, and you have to believe it. And until you believe that, there's no way you're going to accomplish whatever it is that you see as your end goal. And I'm constantly telling them that end goal doesn't have to be one set thing. You need to constantly change that end goal to meet whatever's changing in your life. You get a big injury. Well, gosh darn, you're probably not going to go out and win the Boston Marathon with a broken leg. You're going to have to change your goal, but be willing to change that goal, and don't think of not being able to get to that goal right now as being a failure. It's just, you got to change and adapt.
That's such good advice. Your kids are so, every kid deserves a teacher like you.
Yeah, this is a great phrase to have. Yeah. It's a great motto to keep in there. And I like the fact that you have it where you can be like a scholar at that time and working towards it. And it's impactful. And it will be to them as they embrace it, as they grow and whatever they decide to do.
Anybody who listens to podcasts, I just need to remember that. Like, whatever it is, you're it. I'm never going to win the Salvo River Canoe Marathon. It's just a fact. I'm going to age. I'm going to stature. I'm so far behind. I'm not going to win it. But I can have a goal of finishing top 35, top 25. But until I believe that I'm good enough for top 25, I'll never be top 25. I mean, those negative thoughts don't belong in our head if you want to be successful. You got to think positive. Fake it till you make it.
When I worked at the school, and I worked at a school for almost 15 years, and in my office, I had behind me a quote that I'm going to share right now, which is really timely now because it's from Wicked, which now everybody knows Wicked, right? But I had this giant quote on my wall behind me that said, "I'm through accepting limits because someone says they're so. Until I try, I'll never know." Period. You can't accomplish anything until you know that you will.
That's it.
And take the steps. And I love the idea of changing your goals. When I first started doing triathlons, my goal was to finish a sprint triathlon. And then as that got more comfortable and I wanted to push myself into more discomfort and keep pushing myself, and it got to half Ironman. But yeah, your goal doesn't have to be to win it.
No, you need to have smart goals. You have to have a goal that is achievable to start off with.
Yeah.
It has to be reasonable. It has to be measurable, something that you can work towards. And if you can work towards it, then you can work backwards and figure out what the planning is you need to get towards that goal. You need to be able to find out your resources and be able to reach out and get the help from the resources. You don't have to do it on your own. That's something I've learned in this canoe thing. Like, I tried going all on my own. When we were in Alaska, there was nobody up there who canoe raced. Like, we couldn't get any feedback, and we sucked. Our technique sucked. When we're canoe racing, paddle on opposite sides of the boat because you're most stable. And these boats are tippy as heck. They're skinny. So you have to paddle on opposite sides most of the time so that you're stable. And the person in the back is the person who says, "Hey, we are going to switch sides." And they do it by saying "hup." And that's also how you dictate the steering. If I'm on the right hand, if in the back of the canoe and stern, if I'm on the right hand side, I'm going to drive the boat to the left and vice versa. But we didn't call hups the whole race. We didn't know enough to do that. We hadn't asked enough. We're terrible. I don't know how we finished. We finished because we had a lot of grit, and we're both very, very stubborn people. It took me, I think, 3-4 years before I finally started reaching out and asking people who are other canoers for advice and asking to go out with them. And it wasn't until this year that I finally started asking really good paddlers to get in the boat with me. Once I started asking those paddlers that were really good in their top 30, top 25, top 10, I realized that they're willing to get in the boat with somebody who's not up there, as long as they see that you're dedicated to doing it and they're willing to give you tips. And once I got in the boat with them, it's like watching my speeds go up. And this year I had 3 or 4 top 10 finishes in some of our smaller races. I've never even come close to the top 20 prior to this. And it wasn't just because I was training. It was by the willingness to just ask these people and the realization that they were once where I was. Someone helped them and they had to ask and go out and ask. It doesn't hurt. It's like asking a prom date out. What's the worst thing to do? Go up to that girl and she says no. What happens if she says no? Oops, I don't have a prom date. I'm going to go have to ask somebody else, or I'm going to go prom on my own. Like, no is not a bad word. No doesn't have to hurt. You put that on you.
That's so true. That's so metaphorical for life.
Very much so.
It's so metaphorical. And I know you well enough to know that you are somebody who is not afraid to ask for help, but will be the first person to offer help to the next guy.
I'm stubborn. I know you are.
But I also know that you will help anybody, because you are going to be that person, if you're not already, for those who are not as fast or skilled as you, that you will be the first one to help somebody else.
When we help, I mean, we're doing it because other people have helped us along the way, right? The one thing I think I always forget when I don't ask for help and I'd be stubborn and try to do it on my own is that when people help other people, they feel good inside for helping.
Yeah.
So it's almost a gift that you're giving somebody by asking them for help. You're giving them the gift of feeling good about helping. It's the easiest gift you can give. It's free.
Okay. So everybody for Christmas this year, you're all getting the gift of helping me.
I really need help doing laundry tonight.
Love it. Dave, is there anything else you want to ask him?
No, this has been great. So great. Your perspective on things is very, very cool. I love the fact that you're out there, you're doing it. It's so cool to meet and talk to people who are just in what they're doing. They're so passionate about it. And it's just cool to learn about the different type of things out there. I know about randomness and like regular sports and other various things, but to learn that this is part of somebody's life and it's their passion, it's just so cool to see. It's so cool to see that you're passionate about it, you love it, and it's just a good thing.
I just made the executive decision that Dave and I are going to come up and see you at the marathon this year.
Oh yeah. My gosh. You know, that's not a drop.
Everybody, like, talk about bucket list, everybody should come see it. It is.
Yeah.
It is absolutely electric. Watching the start, literally thousands of people on the bank of the river for the start. I mean, 9 o'clock at night. What sporting events are starting at 9 o'clock at night? Well, I guess we have lots of professional sports.
Do not get me started. It is the middle of the night. I don't understand why sports balls go so late. I can go on about this. Okay. Yeah.
And this is one that goes all tonight, but I mean, the excitement level, it is insane. And awesome. Like, one of the things I tell some of the rookie paddlers, all the rookie paddlers I get a chance to talk to, is you're a rookie once. You run down that road, and when you get to the water and set your boat in, get in that boat, and just for a split second, just stop and look at that crowd. 1,000 people all screaming for something that you do. They're so excited. You can't get that memory back again. It is phenomenal. The other aspect is, as an athlete doing something like this, is remembering that you're not just doing this for yourself. You're doing it for so many other people. For me, I'm doing it for my students who are watching me. Students in the past, students in the future, something I can talk to them about. During COVID, I also found out that, I mean, selfishly, I did think until COVID, this was a me thing and my partner thing and all of our competitors. During COVID, the race was canceled, pretty much everything. There was, I think we had 8 boats that we decided last minute, like that night, the day that marathon was supposed to start, we decided that, hey, we're going to put our boats on the road at 9 o'clock. Somebody is going to set off a firework and we're going to run our boats down to the river and we're going to hop in the river. We're going to go and we're going to treat it like a marathon start. Some of us only went to the first landing, which is like an hour out of town. That's my friend and I were busy building this house. So that's all we did. Some people treated it as a relay. They went so far and then someone else filled in. And there's some people that went the whole way. But one of the biggest things I took away that night, as we're paddling down the river, there were still people at their houses, at their docks. So many of those people said, thank you for doing this for us. My partner and I got back in the car and I was like, did you hear that? They were thanking us for doing it for them. And here this whole time, we thought we were doing that for us. We thought we were being selfish, thinking this was all about us and us continuing a tradition that we have and plans that we had. We affect such a greater community in everything that we do. And we got to think outside of ourselves and so many of the things we do. Whatever you're doing, think about those people on the outside, all those spectators that come and watch the race, who aren't friends and family. They're just doing it because this is something they enjoy, whether it's a tradition, whether it's because you inspire them. There's other people out there.
It's so cool talking to you, Brian.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Is there anything else that you would like to add?
No, I'm just, God, it's so nice to be able to reconnect.
Talking to you, Brian, heals a piece of me. I can't explain it. I will not be taking questions about that, but it just does.
Grailing the Salva River will welcome you with open arms.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Brian.
Wow, it's great talking to you. It's great meeting you, Dave.
Nice to meet you as well.